what we discussed in our previous classes. I'd like to welcome Noam Lobby back to the course. And Mother Usha. It'd be wonderful for you two to come back. Now I feel complete. Okay, so what do we discuss?
The Sambhas pastime because of like excitus. How the Bhagavatam and Uttar Veda and stuff.
Yeah. So we told if the class is now on the Melbourne website and the Bhakti by Bhav link. So especially you should listen to the previous class, which was Monday night's class. If anyone missed it, then please listen to it because there's some important information. Okay. So we told the story of how the Bhagavatam manifested to be spoken in terms of the Uddhava Gita, which is found in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, and also the conversation which takes place between Maitreya and Vidura, which constitutes the 3rd and 4th canto of the Bhagavatam. We also told how that was manifested too. So if you didn't hear that part, then please listen to the previous class and you can find out about that. Okay. Any other points?
Talk about how the words of atheists or non-devotees can never affect the devotees' mood towards the Lord and devotion, even though they may not be so strictly convinced that they're
Any other points?
We discussed how the audio feels great lamentation when he said when Krishna is no longer physically present before him. Mm. But although he's feeling lamentation in his consciousness, he's always with Krishna because Krishna's pastimes are eternal and they are always going on from there. So he's participating in Krishna's pastimes and in his consciousness he's actually united with Krishna.
Any other points?
Lord Krishna's pastimes are highly opulent. Even Lord Narayan is attracted by those pastimes. Mm.
Good. Nice point. Anything else?
He can, you know, only if he wants eternally.
Nice point, also.
Also, while speaking with the remembers, the gopis have been down in the height of their love for Krishna.
Hmm.
Very good.
So, last class, there was a question about Nitya Siddhas and Nitya Buddhas, about material body versus spiritual body.
Yeah.
So, I was listening to one of the lectures of one of the Maharajas, and he was basically in Kheturi Gram, and he was talking about the pastime of Narottam Das Thakur. He mentioned that how Narottam Das Thakur Mahashaya left this material world and mentioned that I think two associates were with him at that time. I think Ramchandra, no, not Ramchandra, I think he left before him.
Ganga and Narayan Chakravarti.
Yeah, Ganga and Chakravarti. Two associates were there in the Ganga, and when he entered the Ganga, his body just melted like butter. Mm. So, and he just gradually, you know, he vanished from there. So, that.
Yeah, that's an extraordinary pastime because see, Prabhupada is a Nitya Siddha, yet he left a body to be put into Samadhi. Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Gopishwar. So they're Nitya Siddhas, but generally what Narottama manifested was a very special pastime. But he is the same as them and they are the same as him. But we gave the example, as Prabhupada explained, about the gold box and the gold plated box for that. So if you find that on the folio, Prabhupada explains that analogy. It gives light onto this particular subject matter, how the pure devotee's body is spiritual, even though it may be material in one sense, but it is spiritual. Any other points?
Just as Yadus were, like last week, last week you were saying the pastime of how the Yadus, they can't be defeated by anyone, so therefore they hit among themselves and then have this mortal body.
Hmm.
it is also said that Abhimanya and Ghatotkaja, both extraordinary personalities who couldn't be defeated by anyone. So therefore Lord Krishna arranged their demise in Kurukshetra.
Yeah. Same
example.
Same example. So we see so far in the Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter, what is the first chapter of the third canto called? The question is by Vidura. So Vidura is, he leaves Hastinapur feeling insulted by Duryodhana, but he sees this pastime of Duryodhana acting in this particular way of speaking very harshly to his uncle, Vidura. He sees that as being an arrangement of the internal energy of Krishna, an arrangement by Lord Krishna himself, to facilitate his renunciation and to facilitate him being able to fully surrender to Krishna. So therefore he takes this Krishna's arrangement and he leaves. And then he begins to travel to many different holy places. And after travelling to many different holy places, he purifies himself and then finally he meets the great sage, Uddhava, who is an intimate associate of Krishna from Dwarka. He is Krishna's most intimate friend. Amongst the Yadu dynasty, is considered to be the most intimate associate of Krishna. So then, at the very end of the first chapter, he says to Uddhava, please chant the glories of the Lord. Please give me, you're an eternal associate of the Lord, you're someone who is very dear to the Lord. Please give me your mercy, and please speak to me about the Lord, glorify the Lord, perform kirtan, or glorification of the Lord. So in this way, then Uddhava begins to speak about Krishna. So the second chapter is called
Remembrance
of Lord Krishna. So then he begins to, in the beginning, when he's being asked by, when Uddhava is being asked by Vidura to speak about Krishna, he enters into a trance. This is called Samadhi. And in this exalted state of consciousness, he begins to remember Krishna and becomes very ecstatic in remembrance of Krishna. And Vidura can understand that actually Uddhava is on the spiritual platform, which means that he is eternally associating with Lord Krishna in Krishna's pastimes in? Not Vrindavan. Dwarka. Not that. So he's eternally associating with Krishna in Dwarka, in his eternal Nityasiddha form. But then, in order to speak to Vidura, then he enters within his material form, what we call a material form. And then he begins to glorify Lord Krishna, remember Lord Krishna. So we saw in verses 7 to 15, he's beginning to recount Lord Krishna's pastimes in this world. And then tonight, we'll see in the remainder of the chapter, he begins to speak about Krishna's extraordinary position, as he has done in the previous verses, verses 7 to 15. He describes Krishna's extraordinary spiritual position, that Krishna is not an ordinary personality, that we're dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So, in the remainder of the chapter, which we'll cover tonight, he then begins to speak about Krishna's position, then about Krishna's pastimes within Dwarka. And then he touches, at the end of the chapter, in the final verses, on Krishna's pastimes within Vrindavan, which Uddhava was fortunate enough to have witnessed by being sent to Vrindavan by Lord Krishna. So he gives some understanding, as we also discussed in the previous class, verses 7 to 15. It was also described that Uddhava had deep knowledge and understanding and realization of the exalted level of bhakti of the residents of Vrindavan. And he glorified this to Uddhava, to Vidura. That bhakti, or the mood of prema, or love for Krishna, which is exhibited only by the residents of Vrindavan, this is the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the deepest rahasya, or secret of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In the chapter of Shloki, we remember the third verse of the chapter of Shloki discusses Prayojana. Yeah. Prayojana means?
The goal,
yeah. But what is the Prayojana? What is the goal?
The Sarakasya.
It is the Sarahasya, yeah.
It is
Prema. Prema Bhakti. This is the Prayojana or the goal of Krishna consciousness. And this is Sarahasya. This means this is the secret or the essence of spiritual life. It is the essence of Krishna consciousness and it is the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, of all of the devotees who are mentioned within the pages of the Bhagavatam, described within the Srimad Bhagavatam, in relation to Lord Krishna, then the residents of Vrindavan, the rahasya, or the secret nature, or the essential nature of their love, their very confidential love for Krishna, is the highest understanding of love of God, is the fullest manifestation of love of God. So this was also touched on upon by Uddhava in the previous verses, 7 to 15. He described how the love of the residents of Vrindavan even surpasses the love of the residents of the Yadu dynasty. Mm. Even he himself, who was the most intimate friend of Krishna amongst the Yadavas, the Yadu dynasty. So therefore, tonight, he will continue to remember Krishna and give deeper understanding. So what is being spoken of here on the deeper level is the confidential love, or the depth of the confidential love of Krishna's eternal associates, and of all of his eternal associates, the residents of Vrindavan have the most intimate love for Krishna out of all of the eternal intercessor devotees. And this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is leading us to, the 10th chapter of that. So this is like a very, how do you say it? One devotee explained it. You know when they show like the shorts?
Trailer.
The shorts of like one of the movies, they show the shorts?
Preview.
Yeah. It's like a preview of what is to come. Mm-hmm. Of the main attraction. Right? The main attraction is? 10th canto. Right? In the 10th canto, then the Vrindavan pastimes are spoken about for maybe 36 chapters. Right? Many, many chapters about Vrindavan are spoken. It's a large section. Here is just like a preview of what is to come. He's describing this love, but he will not go into it in detail yet, because this is not the way to systematically study the Bhagavatam. Other things have to be covered and realized and understood first. Then one can approach those things. But he is giving like a glimpse into the love of those eternal associates of Krishna. Okay. Any points?
Just a question. Yeah. Uddhava is not on the same platform as the residents of Vrindavan in terms of, you know, the study of Krishna. So
on the same platform or not on?
He's not on the same platform.
Oh, yeah.
So how do we basically comprehend or understand what basically gopis were talking about Krishna? How actually do you understand the gopis love Krishna when you are not on the same level?
So he has an appreciation of the greatness of that love. He cannot fully feel that love himself, but he has an appreciation of it. Just like we can see Srila Prabhupada has an extraordinary state of love and devotion for Krishna. So we can't fully realize it at this point in time, but we can appreciate it. So Uddhava may not realize exactly what the gopis are feeling, but he can appreciate it. And therefore he prays to take birth as a blade of grass in Vrindavan so that the gopis can trample upon his head. And when you go to Govardhan and you do Parikrama Govardhan, when you go around Govardhan and you're coming back up towards Radha Kund, then you go past one kund called Uddhava Kund. So Uddhava, he resided at this place and he was praying that he would take birth as a blade of grass. So when the gopis would travel back and forth, and they would travel on his head, he would take the dust in it. So he had so much appreciation for their love, so much humility and appreciation for their love. Any other points?
Little diversion, but we're talking about Nitya Siddhas. Last week there was a report in the newspaper saying that Jesus Christ and his wife and child bones were excavated from Jerusalem, and there was a documentary shown in the US, and it was very well carried by all the newspapers. So I was wondering whether, if that is true, are the bones just for atheist people to show that, well, he has left it? Last week, I think, Wednesday or Thursday, it was the headlines in each paper.
Yeah, it was there, it was mentioned. So this is the, if this is the tomb of Jesus, this is the tomb, like this. So, Yeah, Jesus is bones. It's like Prabhupada has been put into samadhi. But actually, these things should not be touched. Actually. But then they don't know if it is or it isn't.
I thought it would be in flowers. When Jesus Christ, it became our flowers.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Prabhu, I read in the scriptures, I think Prabhupada was mentioning, it was mentioned in Bhakavishya Purana, something like that, maybe I'm making a mistake, that actually Jesus Christ went to India and he was living on some Shrinkar Lake or something like that.
Shrinkar.
And there is actually in the Buddhist scriptures that at the time they were talking about him and so many other things. And it says in the scriptures that he will leave the body there.
Yeah, but it's not, none of it's confirmed. Prabhupada never said that this was Jesus. There is something which says in the Puranas, it is mentioned there, but it's never been confirmed if it is actually Jesus or not. Not that. So the point is that we're not sure. Not that. Basically, it's just Hollywood making more money. At the end of the day, that's what it is. Because there's no proof at this point in time. So their succession has been lost. Like that. Within our succession, then, you know, we know where Krishna disappeared. We can take you to the place where Krishna disappeared. We can take you to the place where Krishna appeared. Right? We can take you to the place where Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. We can take you to the place where Krishna danced with the gopis. Right? We know, because our succession is intact. Their succession is not intact, and therefore the whole thing is, there's not a lot of value. So now they say this is that, like that, but we don't know, is it or isn't it? So, we don't know. Okay, so we begin with text number 16:34. When I think of Lord Krishna, how he was born in the prison house of Vasudeva, although he is unborn, how he went away from his father's protection to Braj and lived there incognito, out of fear of the enemy, and how, although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear, all these bewildering incidents give me distress.
Because Lord Krishna is the original person from whom everything and everyone has emanated, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu, Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Janmadiya Sedaha, nothing can be equal to or greater than him. The Lord is supremely perfect, and whenever he enacts his transcendental pastimes as a son, a rival, or an object of community, he plays the part so perfectly that even pure devotees like Uddhava are bewildered. For example, Uddhava knew perfectly well that Lord Sri Krishna is eternally existent and can neither die nor disappear for good. Yet he lamented for Lord Krishna. All these events are perfect arrangements to give perfection to his supreme glory. It is for the enjoyment's sake. When a father plays with his little son and the father lies down on the floor as if defeated by the son, it is just to give the little son pleasure and nothing more. Because the Lord is all-powerful, it is possible for him to adjust opposites such as birth and no birth, power and defeat, fear and fearlessness. A pure devotee knows very well how it is possible for the Lord to adjust opposite things. But he laments for the non-devotees who, not knowing the supreme glories of the Lord, think of him as imaginary, simply because there are so many apparently contradictory statements in the scriptures. Actually, there is nothing contradictory. Everything is possible when we understand the Lord as the Lord and not as one of us, with all our imperfection.
So the point is here.
All contradictions are reconciled in a perfect. all contradictions are reconciled when you have a perfect consciousness.
What do you mean by that?
Krishna reconciles all contradictions. When you bring Krishna in this picture, whatever look, apparently looks as a contradiction are being reconciled.
Remember the verse of Janma Karma Cha Mithya, which is that these are transcendental pastimes. Mm. Understands, doesn't get distressed. Times of material. Mm.
What's your reference? Any other points?
Yeah, I think it associates as a result by his actions. Even though knowing he's ever existing and eternal, he got so in thinking of how he fed from the throat to think got the result.
Why should he be distressed?
Who's that?
Uttava.
What about? By remembering this. Yeah, we'll explain this point. This is an important point.
Yes, Prabhupada comments on the topic of how the different avatars like Shankara, like, you know. He mentioned that there is seemingly contradictory, but there is no contradiction in the scripture, Prabhupada says. One has to understand how the process has developed to now. Although it's the Lord's avatar only, he pleads for the time. So one has to understand the need there and how it has developed.
Yeah, that's a nice point. Any other points? So, Krishna is unlimitedly powerful. And because he is unlimitedly powerful, this is the definition of God. God is known as?
Bhagavan.
Bhaga means? Opulences. Van?
Full of.
Yeah, the abode of. Opulence. Right? Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yasya shaha sriyaha jnana vairagya yaschaiva shanambhaga itingana. Right? These six opulences. Krishna has shanambhaga itingana, which means aishwaryasya samagrasya. Samagrasya means unlimitedly. Right? Unlimitedly strong, unlimitedly rich, unlimitedly intelligent, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly renounced, unlimitedly famous. This is God. So one must have these opulences or this power unlimitedly to be the all-powerful being. And when one has this unlimited power, then he has achincha shakti. Achincha shakti means inconceivable potency. So through his inconceivable potency, he can reconcile apparent contradictions. Things may appear contradictory, but within Krishna they can be reconciled because he is God. He is the supreme, all-powerful personality. So there is no contradiction within Krishna. Because if someone says, well, how can he be eternal? He can be the oldest. Purana Purusham, which means the oldest person, is spoken of by Lord Brahma within the Brahma Samhita. Yet he is another Yovana. Another Yovana means he is always youthful. He can reconcile this because he is supreme. He can be eternal, be the oldest person, without beginning, right? Without end. Anadiya, adiya means without a beginning, without an end. Yet he is always youthful. That is his inconceivable potency. And whenever he appears in any particular form, when he appears in the form of a baby, for the pastimes which he exhibits with Mother Devaki or Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev, then he does not diminish in his potency. He is equally as powerful no matter what his form is. So we see in the pastime of Putana, when she came to see him when Krishna was only a baby, only 6 months old, but she understood when she took that child upon her lap, this child was the source of all power within the universe. He was the unlimited supreme being himself. So this is Krishna. Yeah? And this is Krishna's achincha nature, which means he is inconceivable. How he can reconcile being in the form of a child, in the form of a baby, completely dependent and helpless upon his parents, and yet simultaneously he is the all-powerful being. Now, because of the Lord's yogamaya potency, which means his internal potency, he covers his devotees in order to facilitate his pastimes, his leelas. Because Krishna wants to enjoy. Now he cannot enjoy if everyone is struck with fear or with awe and reverence within his pastimes. If Krishna's devotees in Vrindavan are constantly aware of his supremacy, then it interferes with the flow of rasa. Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, yet within particularly his pastimes in Vrindavan, that Aishwarya, or that power, or that potency, is totally overcome by Madhurya. Madhurya means sweetness. Right? His pastimes are so sweet that his pure devotees, they forget his supreme nature. They do not remember this is the supreme Bhagavan, or the supreme personality of Godhead. Simply they are thinking, this is my child, right? Or this is my lover, or this is my friend. Right? So this is the nature of Krishna's pastime. So Uddhava is remembering this particular Sangha?
Wednesday, I'm not a member.
Yeah, so can you close the door? Because we're doing class.
Thank you.
Okay. So, in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, what was the point I was just making? Mm-hmm. Do you? Yeah.
His pastimes are so sweet.
So sweet. So sweet.
You want to study about Krishna's supreme status?
It gets in the way of the.
In Vrindavan. Speaking about Uddhava. So, in terms of Uddhava, Uddhava is remembering Krishna's pastimes here. And he is finding it very difficult to understand how Krishna can be the supreme personality of Godhead, yet there is no fear or there's no interference in his pastimes. So in this verse, Uddhava remembers, when I think of Lord Krishna, how he was born in the prison house of Vasudev, although he is unborn, how he went away from his father's protection to Braj and lived there incognito out of fear of the enemy, and how, although unlimitedly powerful, he fled from Mathura in fear. All these bewildering incidents give me distress. So how can he be feeling distress? Because Uddhava is somewhat of a mixed devotee. Meaning that in Dwarka, the devotees had a mixed understanding of Krishna's Madhurya and his Aishwarya, which means his opulence and his sweetness. There is some mixing of the two elements within Dwarka. Within Vrindavan, the devotees are completely forgetful of Krishna's Aishwarya or his potency as being the Supreme Lord. But within Dwarka, the devotees have some cognizance or some remembrance that Krishna is the Supreme Person. Yet, they think that he is also our family member. And they treat him as such. They have sweet pastimes like that. But still, there are some cognizance like that. But here we see that Uddhava is saying, I'm afraid. And Prabhupada is explaining that this is because he has such an intimate love for Krishna. It is not exactly like the love of the residents of Vrindavan, which is completely, where they're completely overwhelmed just by their feeling of their relationship with Krishna. It's not quite on that level. But still, the residents of Dwarka, they're feeling these kind of emotions. So Uddhava is feeling afraid for Krishna when he remembers those pastimes. Because when Vasudev, he took Krishna as a baby and took him across the Jamuna in order to take him to Gokul, to the house of Nanda Maharaj in Yashoda. When he was crossing the Jamuna, Jamuna Devi is an eternal associate of Krishna. She is an expansion of Vishakha Devi, who is one of Krishna's most intimate consorts. Right? Vishakha Devi is born on the same day as Srimati Radharani. Right, on Radhashtami, Vishakha is also born on that day, and she looks practically identical to Srimati Radharani. Right, so beautiful. But she is, Radharani is a very deep golden color, Gaurangi, and Vishakha is like a more lighter golden color. But they practically look identical, born on the same day, and they're very intimate. So Jamuna Devi is an expansion of Vishakha Devi. So when Vasudeva was carrying child Krishna across the Jamuna, Jamuna, on that night, you're reading the Bhagavatam, she was very restless. Right? There were big waves and everything. So her waves came up and they stole Krishna from the arms of Vasudev and took him into the river in the middle of the night because she wanted to embrace Krishna. So Krishna was just enjoying the pastime. But Vasudev was completely overcome with anxiety. He nearly left his body, right, out of complete fear. Imagine if you had your child within your arms and suddenly you fell into a rushing river, very turbulent river, right? Your mind would just be struck by anxiety. So Uddhava is remembering these pastimes and he's thinking like this also. And this is the way that Vasudev was also thinking. But it is not quite on the level of the residents of Vrindavan. Because we see that when the residents of Vrindavan, they went to Kurukshetra later on in Krishna's pastime. You read in the 10th canto. When the residents of Vrindavan went to Kurukshetra, and the residents of Dwarka also went to Kurukshetra. Right? And Krishna and the residents of Dwarka and the residents of Vrindavan, they all met in Kurukshetra. So this is spoken about later in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So at that time, it is described that Mother Devaki and Mother Yashoda had not seen Krishna for years. So when finally she came before Lord Krishna, then she took Krishna, who was obviously grown up at that time, and she placed Krishna on her lap, right? And milk was flowing from her breast, and she was overcome with maternal affection for Krishna. And Mother Devaki, who was Krishna's mother, she was seeing how much love there was between Krishna and Yashoda. Because Yashoda's love is just pure Vatsalya Ras. Right? There's no mixture of awe and reverence there. Just pure Vatsalya. The perfection, the origin of Vatsalya Ras. And Krishna was in ecstasy and he was reciprocating in ecstasy with Mother Yashoda. So Mother Devaki at that time, when she saw what was taking place, she said something to remind Mother Yashoda of the situation. And she said, actually, this child, right, who stayed with you during his childhood and obviously has great affection for you, he is my child. My child. Like that. So she was pointing out to Mother Devaki, to Mother Yashoda, don't forget, he's actually my child. Okay. And what was Mother Yashoda's reaction? She didn't even hear. She didn't even hear what Devaki said. She didn't even hear. Right? Because her love was so high. Right? So this is the internal energy of the Lord, the Yogamaya potency, the Lila Shakti. It allows the devotees to relate to Krishna in the most intimate, confidential way, to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. Right? So that is what is taking place here. That Uddhava is feeling that anxiety in his relationship, just remembering the pastimes, he's feeling the anxiety towards Krishna. Vasudeva was feeling anxiety towards Krishna. Devaki was feeling the anxiety towards Krishna. But we'll see as this chapter continues, we'll see that compared to the residents of Vrindavan and their love for Krishna, then their love is the topmost love for Krishna, because it's completely free of any notion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whereas all the other devotees in all the other dhams within creation, Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwarka, Mathura and so forth, they all have this concept that Krishna is the Supreme Lord to some extent. So therefore this inhibits the sweetness or the madhurya of the relationship. Like that. So,
I mean, if he is a mixed devotee, between Aishwarya and Madhurya, right? He knows that Lord Krishna is the Supreme, right? Because he knows his powers. Shouldn't it be the opposite, that he will not have distress? Because knowing that he is a Supreme Person, that he can tackle any situation, rather than if you spoke about in the Madhurya, like, They don't know that he is a Supreme. They think that, I mean, Ashoda and Nanda Maharaj, they're always afraid that something is going to happen to Krishna. Mm. So for them to get distress is different to when Uddhava, he knows the exact position of Krishna. So where should the distress be?
He does, but he's also, it's mixed. See, it's not pure Aishwarya. It's not purely thinking that he is Supreme Lord. Right? There's some mixture. Right? It's, in other words, it's described the Aishwarya and the Madhurya are mixed. There is a sweetness in the feeling that he is Krishna's family member. Right? They are cousins, actually. It's described in the 10th canto in the commentaries. They're cousins. Uddhava and Krishna are cousins. Very intimate associates. Most intimate associates. So, because of the intimacy of their relationship, they relish the sweetness in that. But still, there is some cognizance or some awareness that he is supreme. He is the Supreme Lord who has descended into this dynasty to perform his pastimes. But still, somehow, there is also a mixture of the, like that. So it's not totally one or the other. But in Vrindavan, then they don't think he is the Supreme Lord who has descended here. They just think he is Krishna. Right? He is our son, or he is our friend, or our lover, like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a similar question. I think I misunderstood something.
Yeah.
It says, you mentioned before that Uddhava feels distressed because he's a mixed devotee. You said like that? Or
yeah.
I misunderstood? Okay. And but also, the Vrindavan devotees all the time they feel distressed for Krishna. So, what's the difference?
Yeah, so what's the distress based upon? The distress is based upon the relationship. Because the devotees are feeling there is a relationship with Krishna. Now, what is the relationship? That is based on the influence of Yogamaya. Right? Because the Yogamaya covers the devotees. Right? Just like Mahamaya covers the conditioned souls, Yogamaya covers the Nitya Siddhas. Mahamaya covers the Nitya Buddhas. Right? But they become covered by the Yogamaya, the Nitya Siddhas, and then they think that Krishna is our friend or like that. And because of that, that's where the anxiety comes from.
And how come the distress come, as Mataji said, how come that he's feeling distressed, Uddhava? Okay, they're covered, but how he feels distressed?
Because he's thinking of Krishna. He's thinking of Krishna. It's just like if you're thinking of your daughter, right? She may not be here now. Right? But if you're thinking of her somewhere and you hear, oh, she's in danger, then automatically distress comes in the mind. Right? Or someone that you don't, maybe not you're related to, but just someone you know, who's a friend, and then you hear, oh, they're in some danger, then automatically distress comes in the mind. Because there's a relationship, some bandha, something is there. Make sense?
Yeah, but I can kind of relate to this mixed devotee. I can relate everything you said, really, but it confuses me, this mixed devotee. It doesn't matter, I don't know.
It's hard to understand because it's a mixture of Aishwarya and Madhurya. But that's what it means. It means that somehow there's a combination of both. Just like, say, you know, your best friend is Prime Minister of Australia, President of America, something. So, you know, he's your best friend. But sometimes you become like, wow, you know, he's a powerful person. Sometimes there's that feeling, like, oh, he's powerful. But other times he's a friend. Like that. So with Krishna, they understand he's our family member, but sometimes it's like, you know. Like Arjuna said to him, you know, when he saw universal form, he said, oh, I did not understand this was what you were. Right? And he said, now come back, please show me your two arms, because this is too much.
No,
like that. Okay. Any other
one? Very simple question. Like you mentioned that when Krishna was born and Vasudeva was looking in his basket and Jamuna has transformed and she take it. I was just wondering when you mentioned that Jamuna is already an expansion of Vishakha Devi. Vishakha Devi is already presented in Krishna's pastimes, like a gopi. So, when you can please, is like a, is she already born before Krishna and the gopi is already born before Krishna? Or?
No, because all of these associates are eternal associates. They all exist eternally. Okay, so Jamuna Devi is an eternal identity, an eternal personality. Like that, Krishna is an eternal personality. Radharani is an eternal personality. Yashoda, Balaram, everyone is an eternal personality. We also have an eternal identity. But at this point in time, we're dreaming. We forgot that. Right there. But everyone has an eternal identity. Does that make sense? Does that answer?
So there is the Damodar Leela, that's the place where Krishna has shown the Aishwarya Shakti overcoming the Madhurya Shakti. When Mother Yashoda was trying to bind him with the ropes, so he has to display the Aishwarya Shakti there because to make the pastime more sweeter. So even in the Vrindavan, most of the time he has shown the Madhurya Shakti, not displaying any potency apart from killing the demons. But at this time, to make the pastime more sweet, he overcame his Madhurya Shakti with the Aishwarya Shakti to make it sweet, so that he can be with cowherd boys at the same time. So that's the place where he overcame his own Madhurya Shakti so that he can display Aishwarya Shakti.
Uddhava, he is saying everywhere that he is distressed, but Srila Prabhupada in his commentary says that actually Uddhava is not distressed. I find there is some sort of, I'm not
he says he's not distressed?
Yes, that's what Srila Prabhupada is saying in the commentary, that actually Uddhava is not distressed.
Here it's saying a pure devotee knows very well how it is possible for the Lord to address opposition, but he laments for the non-devotee who, not knowing the Lord's glory, think of him as imagination.
Yeah, so that's there, but at the same time he does feel anxiety. There is, Uddhava is feeling anxiety. But, what Prabhupada is explaining is that Uddhava understands how Krishna can do these things. He understands Krishna's achincha shakti, or Krishna's ability to reconcile contradictions. He understands that. But still, even though he understands that Krishna can, he understands there's no danger for Krishna because he is supreme. He understands that. But still he feels anxiety because of the sambandha or the relationship. Does that make sense? He understands, right? Theoretically he understands. Intellectually he understands. Because he understands, just like we understand. There's no danger for Krishna. But because of his love for Krishna, he feels anxiety. Make sense?
He's not feeling anxious.
Yes, I'm explaining like that, because he does feel anxious, because it says in the verse he does like that. So then we have to reconcile the two. So I just explained how they reconcile. So what it means is an apparent contradiction. So these apparent contradictions can be reconciled. That's it. Any other points?
But it's clear that he plays the part so perfectly, and even pure devotees like Uddhava.
It's an anxiety.
I think the choice of the word distress is maybe a bit too strong. Maybe, I mean, he must have meant anxious for Krishna. But distress and.
Where's the confusion? Is there a confusion here?
No.
What's the line everyone's confused about?
He says he's bewildered.
Yeah.
He doesn't say Uddhava is bewildered. It doesn't say he's not bewildered or not anxious. It does say he's bewildered.
That's what I just said.
Yeah,
I just said. Is it clear? Hands up if anyone's confused still. Is anyone confused? Okay, so it's clear. Okay. It's a contradiction. It's clear. Okay. Lord Krishna begged pardon from his parents for their Krishna and Balaram's inability to serve their feet due to being away from home because of great fear of Kamsa. He said, O mother, O father, please excuse us for this inability. All this behavior of the Lord gives me pain in heart. So this is the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam once again. Huh? What is the essence of the Bhagavatam? Yeah, that is it. The essence of the Bhagavatam is rasa. Right? It is rasa. Right? This word rasa means mala, or exchange of relationship. Right? Now, the Bhagavatam shows to us the exchange of relationship, or the sweetness in the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees. Krishna himself is feeling that he has disappointed his parents because he was not there for his parents for the first 10 years of his manifest pastimes in this world. He was feeling disappointed that he could not be there to serve them, to do loving services for his mother and father during his childhood. Yeah, no, that's beside the point. So the point is that Krishna is feeling this feeling of disappointment.
Emotion.
Yeah, he's feeling this. And how does that make Devaki and Vasudev feel? Right? It makes Devaki and Vasudev feel overwhelmed with love for Krishna. Because Krishna has so much love for them that the Supreme Lord Himself, who is their son, right? The son is expressing, the two children are expressing disappointment that they could not have served the parents properly. Right? And because they're feeling so much affection for their parents, and the parents are feeling so much affection for them. So this is what the Bhagavad Gita is about. This exchange of rasa between Krishna and Krishna's eternal associates. Like that.
Like verse in the first canto, third verse,
yeah. So this is Bhagavad Gita is full of rasa. Yeah. So this is in the third verse of the Bhagavad Gita itself, which is the Mangalacharya.
Mm-hmm.
It says this Bhagavad Gita is all about rasa.
Mm-hmm.
And Shukadeva Goswami, he is like the parrot who has pecked that ripened fruit and he's made it even sweeter.
Right?
So the rasa is coming even more sweet. Right? So this is what the Bhagavad Gita is about. It's about rasa. It is about the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's eternal associates. Who, after smelling the dust of his lotus feet even once, could not forget it? Simply by expanding the leaves of his eyebrows, Krishna has given the death blow to those who were burdening the earth. This is a description of someone who is very powerful. Krishna is so powerful that he just moves his eyebrows and he destroys 640 million soldiers. That is Aishwarya. That is power. Right? And that's what the Bhagavad Gita is also teaching us. This is who you are dealing with. But you are dealing with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Just by the movement of his eyebrows, right, 640 million soldiers were annihilated. He said to Arjuna, they're already gone. Right? You simply fight and you will take the credit. But actually, I've destroyed everyone. This is power. Right? This is who we're dealing with. We're dealing with the Supreme Lord. Right? But when you get to the 10th canto, even though you're dealing with the Supreme Lord, the devotees forget he's the Supreme Lord. Right? So this is what the Bhagavad Gita is about. So that's why it is rahasya. Rahasya means it's not easy to understand. Rahasya means secret. Right? So it's not easy to understand. Someone who's this powerful, that you forget he's this powerful. Right? So that you can relate to him in a very sweet way. Right? So this is not easy to understand. So it takes a deep amount of study. So we have to study the first 9 cantos very perfectly. And we have to realize what the first 9 cantos are teaching us so that when we come to the end of the first 9 cantos, then we can actually understand who we are dealing with. Right? So it is a deep study. It has to be imbibed fully. It has to be real. All this knowledge has to be realized. Right? We have to realize Krishna's position. And then we have to forget Krishna's position. But you can't forget his position until you realize his position. And you have to study very sincerely in order to realize his position.
What
that
means expanding the leaves of his eyebrows?
It's just poetry. His eyebrows are like leaves.
Okay.
Shape. Like a leaf is like that. So his eyebrows, are also like that. Poetry, just like that.
The smell of his of the dust of his lotus feet, does it smell like juicy leaves?
No, Krishna's body has its own aroma.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna has his own aroma.
Mm-hmm.
But then, when the devotees worship Krishna, they put sandalwood pulp, chandan, right, mixed with tulsi, mixed with saffron, mixed with camphor, with all these different things, and then they put that on his feet. So that also comes. But Krishna himself, his own personality, his own body, has its own aroma, which is even more attractive than any of the other fragrances which are mixed and offered.
But the four Kumaras, when they went there, they smell the aroma of the perfume.
But if you read that pastime where they go there to meet him, it says they smelt the aroma from his feet mixed with Tulsi. Like that's what it says. Like that. So it's actually the Lord himself who is, just like when we take prasad. Why does prasad taste sweet? Because Krishna's saliva has mixed. So it is because Krishna is sweet that then the prasad becomes delicious. So similarly, the attractive feature is actually the aroma from Krishna's own body. The sound of his flute, anything which emanates from Krishna is as sweet as he is. It's not different from him. Someone else had a point?
I was wondering, just something, you have to extrapolate from the point of the Jura and distress.
Yeah.
My point is this, you know, in the spiritual world, nature siddhas are facilitated to partake in the Lord's pastime, you know, by the Lord's energies.
Yeah.
And yet, Goswamis and also the devotees, great devotees, all express missing the Lord. You know, they really miss the Lord. Why is it wrong for jivas like us to miss a relative when they have departed? Because part of the, you know, teachings is devotees don't hanker, don't lament.
Mm.
You know, so why do you think that is?
Yeah, because that's natural for every entity to feel separation from someone who's departed. That's natural. That's part of being a person. But the point is that when we understand, when we go onto the platform of eternity, because at this point in time our consciousness has not entered onto the eternal platform.
Yeah.
At this point in time we're still, our consciousness is still involved in the temporary platform.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go onto the eternal platform, then as the Bhagavad Gita says, you don't lament for what happens on the temporary platform. Because you understand it's temporary. The person has not really died. Or,
yes.
But when you're on that platform, then you begin dealing with spiritual emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So those emotions, they're also there, but then they're spiritual.
Yeah.
So that may...
Yes. Okay, thanks.
Like that. You have personally seen how the king of Chedi, Shishupal, achieved success in yoga practice, although he hated Lord Krishna. Even the actual yogis aspire after such success with great interest by performance of their various practices. Who can tolerate separation from him? So the king of Chedi, Shishupal, he was killed by Krishna in the assembly of Maharaj Yudhishthira's Rajasuya sacrifice. So at that time there were tens of thousands of persons present, and they saw Krishna kill Shishupal. He released his Sudarshan Chakra, and the Sudarshan Chakra decapitated, took the head from Shishupal. At that time, Shishupal's Atma, his soul, entered into Krishna. Right. So even though he was demoniac, or he had a envious mentality towards Krishna, because Krishna does not envy anyone. Krishna does not feel envy towards others, even though someone may envy him. And this is a sign of a very great personality, a very great devotee. Someone may envy them, but they do not feel any envy themselves towards that person. Right? Someone may feel hatred towards you, but if you are a very advanced devotee, you will not feel hatred towards others, even the people who hate you. So Krishna did not feel anything. So therefore he gave benediction to Shishupal. And he allowed Shishupal to attain liberation, mukti. So therefore he entered into the atma, into the effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti of Krishna. So when it says that Shishupal entered into Krishna's body, it's not that he actually entered his body, but surrounding Krishna's body is his effulgence, his jyoti, his Brahma jyoti, spiritual effulgence. So what he entered into was Krishna's spiritual effulgence, his Brahma jyoti. Right? So in Nectar of Devotion, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is described, Rupa Goswami describes there are five types of liberation or mukti. Sarupya, Samipya, Shashti, and Salokya. Right? So these four first four are considered personalistic types of liberation. Right? Salokya means to attain the same planet as Krishna. Right? Sarupya means to get a form similar to Krishna. Shashti means to get opulence similar to Krishna's. And Samitya means to get the association of the Supreme Lord on the same planet. It means to get the association of that. So then the final one is called Sayujya. Sayujya Mukti means impersonal. It means merging into the effulgence of Krishna. So this is never accepted by the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas will accept the first four types of liberation, and in fact they do when they go back to the spiritual world, but only in relationship to their service to Krishna. They don't desire it separately. They don't desire, let me have opulence like Krishna, let me have a form like Krishna. That is given to them in order to facilitate their service, but that is just concomitant. But the devotees do not accept Sayujya, means they do not accept to merge into Krishna. But this is given to Krishna, Krishna gives this type of liberation to the demons. And he also gives this type of liberation to
the
yogis, the gyanis, and also the
mayavadis.
Right? Because the mayavadis are also demons. They are also asuras. Because the asuras, the demons, like Shishupal, Dantavakra, Jarasandha, Kamsa, all these types of demons, they wanted to cut off Krishna's head, cut off his arms, cut off his legs. They wanted to remove Krishna's form. Right? And what do the Mayavadis do? Same thing with philosophy. He does not have a form. Remove his form. Right? So what does Krishna give them? He gives them impersonal liberation. And what does he give the demons? Impersonal liberation. But they do not enter into his pastimes, his abode. Prabhupada mentions in this section in the purports, he says that when Krishna and Arjuna were on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna was shooting his arrows into the opposing army, and he was killing the soldiers, at the moment of their death, they looked at Arjuna's chariot, and they meditated upon Krishna. And when they saw Krishna, Prabhupada said they felt some prema, or some love. They saw Krishna's form, and they thought, how could anyone be so beautiful? Mm-hmm. Right? You want to go for it? Cool. And they said, how could anyone be so beautiful? Right? No, how could anyone be so attractive? And they were, at the time of death, they were performing some bhakti. Right? They had some love for Krishna. Something was aroused. Some transcendental feeling towards Krishna. So at that time, Prabhupada points out, they went to Vaikuntha. Right? They went to Krishna's Vaikuntha. They didn't go to Goloka Vrindavan, but they went to Vaikuntha. And they took on forearm forms, and they became eternal associates of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. This is because they were not envious of Krishna. For those who are envious of Krishna, they cannot enter Krishna's eternal pastimes. They can only enter into Krishna's impersonal effulgence.
Shishupal and Dantavakra were expansions of Jaya and Vijaya.
They were Jaya and Vijaya, not expansions.
How do we reconcile that they assumed Brahman, whereas Jaya and Vijaya are in the same planet?
Because they were cursed to take how many births?
Three births.
So they were cursed to take three births. So because they were demons and they had to take these repeated births, then each time they entered into the Lord's form and then they came out again. Like that. But then the fourth time, who did they appear as?
There was one more.
Secret one.
Jagannadai.
Same. Right. First time, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Kumbhakarna, Ravana, right. Shishupal Dantavakra, then Jagannadai. Fourth time. Not mentioned because Mahaprabhu's pastimes are channa, which means they're hidden. They're not mentioned directly in the Vedas, Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So therefore, they appeared the fourth time, and what they could not even get with Krishna or Ram or Nisringa or Varaha, they got with Mahaprabhu. They got Krishna praying. And they all went back to Godhead at that point. Like that.
Good question, Prabhu.
the opponents who fought in the Kurukshetra, at least they could get Arjuna's arrow and also at the same time could see Lord's face before departing, therefore they went to Vaikuntha. But those soldiers who were fighting for Yudhishthira, they were not killed by Arjuna. So four soldiers, where did they go? They did not go to Vaikuntha.
Yeah, they said they would go to the heavenly planets.
But that's unfortunate in one sense, that because having fought for Yudhishthira.
Yeah, they did not like that. Mm-hmm. Or you could say if they were thinking of Krishna when they left, then they would have also, because they also saw Krishna. They also saw Krishna. So if they may have been thinking of Krishna while they're fighting. So they're thinking of Krishna, and Krishna says, Yam Yam Vapi Svaram Bhavam, whatever you think, then you are. But they, Germany said the Chaturu will go to the planet of the sun god or some heavenly planet. But if they're Krishna conscious, then they will also go to high Krishna conscious.
And they would also develop Agyata Shukriti by fighting on the side of the Pandavas. So.
Or bhakti. It could have been just. They were, could have been devotees. Many of them would have been devotees.
They were serving the devotees of the Lord. They were serving the pure devotees of the Lord in the Lord's mission.
And many of them would have been pure devotees. Many of them would have known that this is Krishna, this is Arjuna, and we will fight for them. We will give our lives for them. So they would have gone to. Spiritual world. Okay.
So Yudhishthira and Vidur, they both, did they took the post of Dhammaraj and Yamraj, or did they go to Krishna?
The Pandavas are eternal associates of Krishna. So then, because they're eternal associates of Krishna, then they travel with Krishna wherever he goes. So when Krishna leaves this universe and goes to the next universe to perform his lila, the Pandavas also leave this universe, they also go to the next universe. They travel with Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example of the travelling roadshow, the circus, so they're part of the entourage of Krishna. They're Krishna's eternal associates. Okay.
So he didn't work as a Dhammaraj?
Say it again?
They didn't work like Yamraj and
Dhammaraj
after they left this
camp. Yeah, Yudhishthira was not Yamaraj. He was the son of Yamaraj. Yeah. He was not Yamaraj, so he didn't
become
Vidura. Vidura was Yamaraj.
So did he go as a...
They may go back to their post of who they were previously, but then now, after having Krishna's association, they become pure devotees. Then they live out their lifetime for the rest of the day of Brahma. Or not even a day of Brahma, for the rest of that Manu, they become that particular demigod. At the end of their life, then they can go back to Godhead like that. Or they can enter into Krishna's pastimes in the material world like that, and then they enter the spiritual world like that. Which verse, Manu? 20. Okay. Certainly others who were fighters on the battlefield of Kurukshetra were purified by the onslaught of Arjuna's arrows, and while seeing the lotus-like face of Krishna, so pleasing to the eyes, they achieved the abode of the Lord. Lord Sri Krishna is the Lord of all kinds of trees, and is independently supreme by achievement of all kinds of fortune. He is worshipped by the eternal maintainers of the creation, who offer him the paraphernalia of worship by touching their millions of helmets to his feet. Therefore, O Vidura, does it not pain us, his servitors, when we remember that he, Lord Krishna, used to stand before King Ugrasen, who was sitting on the royal throne, and used to submit explanations before him, saying, O my Lord, please let it be known to you.
Can I ask a question, Prabhu?
Yeah.
In the previous sloka, that is 21, Srila Prabhupada used in his purport that Lord Krishna is the supreme for three worlds, three qualities. Is that the reason why we circumambulate around deity three times? Because everywhere we find three appearing?
Not that I know of. As far as I understand, it's like when we say, like Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam. So Prabhupada explains that when something is very important, then the Vedas will mention it three times to give emphasis. So my understanding is we circumambulate three times in order to emphasize like that. Sometimes first time you don't concentrate so much. Second time, third time. So when you do something repeatedly, usually it brings your mind more to the activity that you're doing. So it will help you to understand. Okay. So here Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport that pure devotees understand Krishna's affectionate dealings are simply for the sake of enjoyment. So this is the point of why Krishna performs all of these different pastimes. Right? It is simply for this reason that he is increasing the enjoyment of his devotees. Krishna comes before King Ugrasen, right? Who is the king of the Yadu dynasty. And he says to him in the morning, O my lord, please let it be known to you. And he gives a report as one of the princes of the Yadu dynasty. He gives respect to the king, Ugrasen, right? His superior personality within the dynasty. So why does Krishna perform this kind of pastime? Why does Krishna not accept the position of being the supreme personality of Godhead like he does in Vaikuntha? In Vaikuntha, no one ever takes his role. In Vaikuntha, no one ever sits on the Lord's throne. Right? In Vaikuntha, he does not become subordinate to his devotees. Because the mood in Vaikuntha is Dasya. Dasya means, or in reference, means everyone is glorifying him as being the supreme lord. But then the reason his pastimes are more intimate within Dwarka, right, is because when he enters into Dwarka, then he takes on a more familial role. It means he becomes like a family member. So now he is the prince of the Yadu dynasty. He would not do this. This is the lord of Vaikuntha, same lord. But when he's in Dwarka, he becomes the prince of the dynasty. And he gives a report to Ugrasen, who is the lord of the dynasty, his superior. So this is the nature of the... This is how the pastimes become sweeter. Now why does Krishna do this? What is his entire point? Prabhupada says because it is for the sake of enjoyment. Because it increases the enjoyment and the love of his devotees and his own love and enjoyment. Right? Because in Vaikuntha, he can receive so much awe and reverence, but it doesn't give him the same pleasure as when he gets chastised by Jatila. Abhimanyu's mother, Radharani's so-called, right? She calls him a black snake. You know, so in Vaikuntha, devotees are glorifying him with great opulent prayers. You are the supreme lord of all. You are the supreme lord of all power. You have unlimited opulence, right? Right. And then he goes to Vrindavan, same personality in Vrindavan, right? And Radharani's mother-in-law calls him a black snake. And he gets more pleasure from that. So why does he do these things? To increase his enjoyment for him and for his devotees. And therefore the enjoyment in the pastimes of Vrindavan is supreme. Because in Vrindavan, the level of intimacy between Krishna and the devotees enters onto a level of intimacy which you will not find in the other dharms. Right? In Dwarka, you won't hear them calling him a black snake. Or, this will not take place. Satyabhama does chastise him. But I don't know if she says like that. But,
yeah. She kicks him.
She kicks him?
Yeah, in one of the pastimes.
In one of the pastimes? Yeah. So Satyabhama does give him a hard time. She's an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Like so she will give some like that. So this gives him pleasure like that. But within Vrindavan, the pastimes become sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Unlimitedly sweet. Okay. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more powerful than he, who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful, and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast?
What's that?
Yeah. One of the key memory verses? Yeah. I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm thinking. Yeah, when Vyasadev, when Shukadev Goswami left, we read in the first canto, Shukadev appeared. When he appeared, he was already 16, he left. And then Vyas sent some devotees after him, some disciples after him to bring him back. And they spoke two verses from the Bhagavatam. I think this is one of the verses they spoke. And when he heard this verse, then he was overcome. I've heard Burajanka say that. He didn't mention it when he gave class, but I think I remember him saying that pretty since. I consider the demons who are inimical toward the Lord to be more than the devotees, because while fighting with the Lord, absorbed in thoughts of enmity, they are able to see the Lord carried on the shoulder of Garuda, the son of Taksha, Kashyapa, and carrying the wheel weapon in his hand. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, being prayed to by Brahma to bring welfare to the earth, was begotten by Vasudeva in the womb of his wife Devaki in the prison of the king of Bhoja. Thereafter, his father, being afraid of Kamsa, brought him to the cow pastures of Maharaj Nanda, and there he lived for 11 years like a covered flame with his elder brother, Baladev. In his childhood, the Almighty Lord was surrounded by cowherd boys and calves, and thus he travelled on the shore of the Jamuna River, through gardens densely covered with trees and filled with the vibrations of chirping birds. So if you read the purport, it gives a very beautiful description of what it was like in Vrindavan. The forests on the shore of the Jamuna are all beautiful gardens, full of trees of mango, jackfruit, apples, guava, oranges, grapes, berries, palm fruit, and so many other plants and fragrant flowers. And because the forest was on the bank of the Jamuna, naturally there were ducks, cranes, and peacocks on the branches of the trees. All these trees and birds and beasts were pious living entities born in the transcendental abode of Vrindavan, just to give pleasure to the Lord and his eternal associates, the cowherd boys. Does it make you feel like wanting to go to Vrindavan? Vrindavan is the most sweet place. Right? It's the sweetest place. It's like Krishna is sweetest in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is the sweetest place. So Prabhupada points out the purport. What is the reason we go to Vrindavan for? The reason we go to Vrindavan is to practice to go back home, back to Godhead. Because when you're in Vrindavan Dham, you're in the spiritual world. And the reason we go to Vrindavan, we go there to practice to go back to Godhead. Because in that place you can get the feeling of what it's like in the spiritual world. So the place where we do our sadhana in order to try to perfect our bhakti so that we can go back to the spiritual world. We can enter back into Goloka Vrindavan. When the Lord displayed his activities just suitable for childhood, he was visible only to the residents of Vrindavan. Sometimes he would cry and sometimes laugh, just like a child, and while so doing, he appeared like a lion cub. Prabhupada points out in the purport that in order to enter Vrindavan Dham, you have to follow the residents of Vrindavan. The residents of Vrindavan have a particular mood in their service to Krishna, right? And that mood is based on raga. Yeah, ragatmika, which means raga means they have spontaneous attraction to Krishna, right? They feel Krishna is my son, or Krishna is my lover, or Krishna is my friend. Spontaneously they feel like that. So Prabhupada points out that if you want to enter Vrindavan after practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, then you have to begin to practice Raga Nuga Bhakti. It means you have to begin to practice your devotion with that kind of feeling, like the residents of Vrindavan have. You cannot do this in the beginning of your devotional service. This will take many years of practice to come to the level where you can even begin to practice worshipping the deity and chanting Hare Krishna with that feeling of spontaneity. That will take time. But that is the way to enter Vrindavan. You cannot enter Vrindavan if you cannot enter into that mood of spontaneous devotional service. That is called Rag Anuga Bhakti. While herding the beautiful bulls, the Lord, who is the reservoir of all opulence and fortune, used to blow his flute and thus enliven his faithful followers, the cowherd boys. So Prabhupada points out that in Vrindavan, Krishna displays the sweetness that he does not display anywhere else within this creation. And his sweetness has four particular features, right? Rupa Goswami says Krishna has four particular qualities which are found only in Vrindavan. Rupa Madhurya, Prema Madhurya, Leela Madhurya, and Venu Madhurya. So here is being spoken of the sweetness of Krishna's flute. Right? Krishna's flute is so wonderful and captivating that it captures the heart of everyone within Vrindavan. And also it's described here that the Rupa Madhurya, or the form of Krishna, is so beautiful. When Krishna is in Vrindavan, the form is so beautiful and so attractive, it captivates everyone within the creation. So this is the secret sweet nature of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. The inhabitants of the great wizards who were able to assume any form were engaged by the king of Bhoja, Kamsa, to kill Krishna. But in the course of his pastimes, the Lord killed them as easily as a child breaks dolls. The inhabitants of Vrindavan were perplexed by great difficulties because a certain portion of the Jamuna was poisoned by the chief of the reptiles, Kaliya. The Lord chastised the snake king within the water and drove him away. And after coming out of the river, he caused the cows to drink the water and prove that the water was again in its natural state. The Supreme Lord Krishna desired to utilize the opulent financial strength of Maharaj Nanda for worship of the cows, and also he wanted to give a lesson to Indra, the king of heaven. Thus he advised his father to perform worship of Guru, or the pasturing land and the cows, with the help of the learned Brahmins. So this is the special nature of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. What did Krishna come to teach us in his Vrindavan pastimes? What was the special quality or the special feature of Krishna's Vrindavan times? What was he trying to teach us?
Simple living?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, exactly. Prabhupada mentions that. That's the last one.
Spontaneous love.
Yeah, platform of spontaneous love. That's nice. Yeah.
Protection of cows. Protection of
the cows. That's nice.
Yes, protection.
Same thing with that. Krishna was teaching us in the Vrindavan pastimes that every activity must be performed for the pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, when Maharaj Nanda was organizing a sacrifice to worship Indra, Krishna, as a small boy, diverted the entire sacrifice. And he said to his father, "Do not worship Indra, but worship the cows and the land where the cows are fed." And where is the land where the cows are fed?
Govardhan.
Giriraj Maharaj Ki. And by some inconceivable good fortune, we have Giriraj Govardhan himself, right? Krishna's eternal associate.
Present here.
From Goloka Vrindavan, right? Who Krishna stopped the entire sacrifice of Indra to prove the point to everyone in the world that Govardhan should be worshipped, right? Because this will give pleasure to Krishna, right? The cows and Govardhan should be worshipped, because Govardhan in Vrindavan satisfies all the he supplies all the necessities for all the residents of Vrindavan in the spiritual world, right? It's from Govardhan that all the necessities of life come from in the spiritual world. He gives everyone their necessities. So therefore, Krishna wanted to establish the Govardhan Puja, the worship of Giriraj, and the worship of the cows. So this was his special one of his special missions when he came to earth in his Vrindavan pastimes, to show that the pleasure of Krishna through the pleasure of his very dear devotees is the topmost level of worship of Krishna. To worship, Lord Shiva says, to worship those things which are connected to Krishna, the tadiyana, right? Those things which are connected to Krishna is even more important than worshipping directly Krishna himself. So therefore, to worship the cows and to worship Giriraj, right, to worship Vrindavan, this gives Krishna the greatest pleasure. So Krishna is showing this in his pastimes. So Uddhava is just giving like a glimpse of the main attraction, right, which will come in the 10th canto. And in the 10th canto, these things will be fully explained and elaborated upon. Okay. Osova Vidura, King Indra, his honour having been insulted, poured water incessantly on Vrindavan. And thus the inhabitants of Braj, the land of cows, were greatly distressed. But the compassionate Lord Krishna saved them from danger with his pastime umbrella, Govardhan Hill. In the third season of the year, the Lord enjoyed as the central beauty of the assembly of women by attracting them with his pleasing songs in an autumn night brightened by moonshine. What does this final verse of the chapter speak of? Rasa Lila. Sava Rasa Sa. Of all of Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, he says this pastime is supreme. Right? This pastime surpasses any other pastime of Krishna, even, in Vrindavan. Of all pastimes, the pastime of Rasa Lila, or his pastime of dancing with the gopis, is the topmost pastime. And this will be explained in chapters 29 to 33 of the 10th canto. And this is considered to be the smiling face of Krishna, or the rahasya, or the deepest, most intimate part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So whatever is just giving a glimpse of what will come in the future of the Bhagavatam. Okay. So tomorrow is the most extremely auspicious day of the year. It is Sri Gaura Panima Maha Mahotsava, which means it is the appearance day of the Yuga Avatar, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has come especially to reveal to the world the teachings of Krishna based upon the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the teachings of Krishna within the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the Bhagavatam, is meant to essentially glorify and ultimately end in glorification of the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Mahavidanyaya, the most merciful incarnation, has come to give this Krishna prema, right? This particular, the love of Krishna between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. This is Lord Chaitanya's special contribution to the world through the process of Harinam Sankirtan. Harinam Anukirtana, like that. So this is the whole purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So tomorrow we can pray very deeply to Mahaprabhu to please give us his mercy so that we can understand the internal reason for him appearing in this world. Because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that the external reason for Mahaprabhu appearing is to teach the Yuga Dharma, Harinam Sankirtan. And tomorrow we'll perform great Sankirtan for the pleasure of the Lord. And his second reason, or his intimate, or his internal reason for appearing, is to reveal and to expand and to give to others this mood of understanding the relationship between Krishna and his eternal associates in Vrindavan. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special contribution. So we can pray to Lord Chaitanya tomorrow to please give us some mercy that we can understand something about his eternal pastimes, and his pray to him to please give us some mercy that we can understand something of the Srimad Bhagavatam and what the essence of the Bhagavatam, what the Bhagavatam is leading towards. Not that song.
I should have announced it, actually, because tomorrow is such an auspicious day. It's a great day to get a Chaitanya Charitamrita set. So I don't know who here has a Chaitanya Charitamrita set or even a Srimad Bhagavatam set, but tomorrow is a very auspicious day, and it's a nice way to get a lot of mercy by getting this set. So if anybody's interested, just come and see some of the Sankirtan devotees or myself think about it overnight and spread the word, maybe to your friends. I'm sure a lot of people are coming tomorrow, so there's great opportunity to spread the glories of the Lord.
Thank you very much. Shimang Garanga Mahaprabhu ki
jai.
Kirilas Maharaj ki
jai.
Kantaraj Shimang Bhagavatam ki
jai.
Vaibhitari Gopremana.
Jai.